Hello, 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 and welcome to the Bible Gumshoe Podcast, the podcast dedicated to answering your questions about the Bible. I'm your host, Nicholas LeMay, and today we're going to be talking about Bible myths, and one myth in particular, and that is, well, it's a myth I grew up with, and maybe you did too, that literal Bible translations are more faithful. Or, the more literal the Bible translation, the better. But here's the problem, and here's why it's a myth. Literal Bible translations don't exist. Literal Bible translations exist as much as a unicorn at the end of a rainbow exists. There's just no such thing. And if you want to talk about word-for-word verses, some people talk about word-for-word versus thought-for-thought, then the closest thing we have to a word-for-word translation is an interlinear translation. And this is how it sounds. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, just as it is written in the Isaiah, the prophet, "Behold, I am sending the messenger my before face your. Who will prepare the way your, the voice of one shouting in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, straight make paths his." Okay. That doesn't work because the syntax and the vocabulary is all messed up. Nothing's in the right order. The Greek and the Hebrew just simply have different structures and different ways of speaking than English does, or Spanish, or German. So there's no such thing as a literal translation, and if there were, it would be horrible. Just as horrible as it would be if your pastor this Sunday read and preached out of an interlinear Bible. So how should we think about Bible translations? Well, Eugene Nida popularized the idea that translations are either more formal or more functional. The idea of formal and functional equivalence. That translation is really the seeking of that equivalence in the target language. And this is helpful. It's more helpful than literal-free translations, or it's more helpful than talking about word-for-word versus thought-for-thought. First, because it doesn't carry the same negative connotations that literal and free do, and it's broader. It allows for greater nuance and definition than word for word and thought for thought do. But there's still some problems with this. So, for Nida, a function or a formal translation, formal equivalence translation, is trying to stick as close as possible to the source language's syntax and vocabulary. In other words, its primary concern is form and structure, whereas a dynamic translation is adopting the source or the target language's structure and conventions and is trying to produce meaning and cares about more about meaning than it does about form. In fact, some have argued that or claim that a dynamic equivalence translation or a functional equivalence translation is actually trying to reproduce the original impact on modern readers as the source text would have had on its original audience, which, if that's the goal of a functional translation or a functional equivalence translation, it's an absolutely unattainable goal. We aren't original speakers of Koine Greek or Biblical Hebrew. We didn't grow up in that culture. There was absolutely no way we could ever know with any degree of certainty, what the original impact would have been. We can guess in some instances, but to make that the goal of our translation means that what we're trying to achieve is not attainable. So formal and functional, those are helpful terms. But we don't want to, I don't think it's helpful to reduce our concept of a good Bible translation even to those two terms. See, and it's not accurate to say that functional translations are worried about meaning, whereas formal translations are worried about form or structure, because everybody involved in this process is concerned about meaning. So nobody translates saying, I don't care what the text means. I just want to stick as closely as possible to the Greek. Or I don't care what the Greek is saying. I'm just going to say it however I think it should be said. And no one's doing this. So how should we think about formal versus functional? Well, let's take a couple examples. Take this one story. I like this story. And it's told by Catherine Barnell. It's a translation, two different translations of the same story from the K'iche language. The first one goes like this, and it's very formal. It is said that being one man not from here, not known where the his or the he comes from, one day, these things he walks in a finca, or in them the coastlands. He saw his appearance one little necklace, or he thought that a little necklace was very pretty thrown on the ground in the road. He took the necklace, this he threw in his mouth, for its cause that coming the one person, another, to his behind this, for his that not he encounters, the one the following this way in his behind this, not he knows that the necklace that he threw in his mouth, this one snake, and the man, this one died right now, because not he knows his appearance, the snake, or that the he ate this, not this a necklace, only probably the snake. Whew. Well, you got that right. Yeah, because I did too. I'm reading it. Now, the story is actually retranslated, and it's told like this. There is a story about a certain man. He didn't come from this part of the world, and indeed I don't know where he came from. One day, this man was walking in the coastlands, in a finca, as they say, when he saw a little necklace, or rather, what he thought was a very pretty little necklace, lying in the road. There was someone coming along just behind him, so he grabbed his necklace and threw it into his mouth, because he didn't want the other person to see it. Well, he did not know that the necklace that he threw in his mouth was really a snake, and the man died there and then because he did not recognize that particular kind of snake, and did not know that the thing he put in his mouth was not a necklace at all, but a snake. This is just such a great example of how we think that formal is better. It's not always better. So what about functional? Is functional better? Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes functional just simply is better. Daniel Wallace gives an example of Romans 3:22. The King James translates very literally, by faith of Jesus Christ. But that really doesn't get at what Paul's saying, because the word faith in the Greek can mean faith or faithfulness. See, they have the word faith in Greek has a wider semantic range, so it encompasses both meanings. Whereas in English, we have two separate words. We have faith or we have faithfulness. And faith is not faithfulness. Faithfulness isn't faith, right? So in the NET Bible, they opted for clarifying through the faithfulness of Jesus Christ. And that helps English readers to understand what's going on. If we leave the ambiguity, like the King James does, we don't help the reader because we just don't have the same semantic choices available to us as the Greek audience does in Greek. Another example is 2 Corinthians 6:11. The King James reads, "Our mouth is open to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide." Now, the Amplified Bible translates it, "We are speaking freely to you. And our heart is opened wide." The CEV says, "Friends in Corinth, we are telling the truth when we say there is room in our hearts for you. Our friends at Corinth, we have spoken to you very honestly." That's much better. "We have hidden nothing from you." I think that's also implied. You know everything that we feel. That last phrase in other translations gets translated, "Our heart is enlarged." Well, if your heart's enlarged, I think you need to go to the hospital right away, right? That's not what it means either. And I'm not sure he's saying you know everything that we feel. These two metaphorical phrases, they're not easily translated in English. The NIV does a good job, I think, when it says, "We have spoken freely to you, Corinthians." And that's what it means, really, to have a mouth open to someone. It's to say everything that you have to say. It's to speak frankly, right? And that's what Paul's saying. One translator suggests that what Paul is saying is, "I've let my tongue run away with me." In other words, I've gotten a little sidetracked, but it's because of my great affection for you. Our hearts are open wide. In other words, they're open wide to you. It's a expression of great affection. So sometimes we want to be functional. Sometimes we want to be formal. Sometimes being functional is bad, right? When is it bad to be functional? Well, we've already seen when it's bad to be formal. But it's bad to be functional when we over-clarify the meaning of any text in such a way that we unduly limit the interpretive possibilities. One example of this is baptism. How should we translate baptism? What was John doing in the wilderness? Was he immersing? Was he sprinkling? Was he pouring? See, those ideas all represent the interpretations of different Christian traditions. They're working with the same Bible, the same word baptizo, the same context, and they're coming to different conclusions. So what do we do with that if we're translating a Bible that we mean to be read across Christian traditions? Well, the minute we overly clarify the meaning of the term, we've automatically alienated everybody except those who have that particular practice. And so there we have a real problem with an overly functional translation. In fact, in English and as well as Latin and in many other translations, the word has been borrowed from the Greek. It comes, baptize is not a native English word, but we borrow it like we do alleluia, like we do amen, words like that, because it's just best left transliterated. And that's not very common that something is best left transliterated, but in this case, I think it is. In this case, to overly clarify baptism would be to unduly alienate Christian readers, especially when there are multiple interpretive possibilities according to the context. I hope what you can see here is that however the decision gets made, right, to be more formal or less formal, more functional, less functional, it all has to do with our interpretation. So translation is all about interpretation. We have to interpret the text in order to get at what it means, in order to translate. So now you see, we're not just talking about functional formal or formal functional. That is too simplistic. Good translation involves the following things. First, careful interpretation. I think we've looked at some of that. Careful interpretation. But also, good translations are clear. So clarity is a virtue. Now, it doesn't mean that we're making everything clear. That is, eliminating all questions and ambiguities from the biblical text. To believe that that's even possible is extremely naive. There simply just are things in the Bible that aren't clear. Not because of the translation, but for other reasons. For example, our distance from the text culturally, historically, geographically, linguistically, all of that makes certain things in the text hard to understand, both New and Old Testaments. Think about 1 Timothy 2:15, for example. You can go and check different Bible translations and how they handle that, but they pretty much all translate it as formally as possible. And that's because no amount of translation or functionality in the translation is really going to clarify that. That involves interpretation that's far more extensive and goes well beyond the purpose of the written translation. So clarity doesn't mean that we're removing all questions and ambiguity from the text. Clarity means that the translation in the target language is readable and understandable. In other words, wherever and whenever possible, the receptor language is not obscuring or making it impossible to understand. So, translation involves clear language. It also involves accuracy, right? So, a good translation is accurate. Now, accuracy doesn't mean woodenness. We've already established that. It doesn't mean that everything is perfectly explained either. It means that the meaning of the text, to the extent possible, comes through in the target language with as little unnecessary omission, addition, and change as possible. That's accuracy. Now, another characteristic of a good translation is naturalness. And what that means is that the language of the translation shouldn't feel forced or foreign to the native speaker. Another mark of a really good translation, I think, is beauty. I think a translation should be beautiful. I think any translation should care about literary quality. A translation ought to be beautiful. It ought to be memorable and pleasing to our ears, to our eyes. So aesthetics is important in translation. Literary aesthetics. Also, a good translation has a clearly defined purpose and fulfills that purpose. So we need to ask the why this translation question, right? What is the purpose of the translation? Is it for all-purpose use? Is it for academic use? Is it for devotional use, for children, for those learning how to read? You see, how we answer the why question is going to determine what kind of translation we make. So form will always follow function. Why will determine the end product. We not only need to be faithful to the text. A lot of people speak about faithfulness to the original authors, the intent, the text. That's all well and good. We do need to be faithful to that. But we also need to be faithful to the purpose of the translation. Why are we translating? So what do we want in our translation? Do we want it to be formal or do we want it to be functional? The answer is yes. We need both. What we really want, and I read this term in a book written by Eugene Nida a number of years ago, and I really like it. What we really need is faithful equivalence, right? We need faithful equivalence. We're after a faithful translation that doesn't mean formal or functional. We don't have to choose like that. It doesn't mean foreignizing or domesticating, like Venuti puts it. And I really actually much prefer that language of foreignizing and domesticating to even formal versus functional. But we don't have to choose. That's not what we're doing here. Faithfulness to the text, absolutely. Faithfulness to the church, yes. Faithfulness to the purpose of the translation, yes. Faithfulness to our own ideals and principles as translators, yes. Faithfulness to the target language, absolutely. Faithfulness to beauty and to God who gave the text. So what makes a good translation? Well, the best translation isn't the most formal. It's not the most literal, right? That translation which is most faithful to all those things, which really embraces its commitment to careful interpretation, to clarity, accuracy, naturalness, beauty, purpose, the church, the text, to God who gave the text. That is the best translation. Well, thank you for listening, and until next time, this is the Bible Gumshoe Podcast. I'm really glad to be back, and I really look forward to hearing from you and any suggestions that you have for future shows. So if you do have a suggestion or you want us to talk about a topic, write me at detective@biblegumshoe.com. That's detective@biblegumshoe.com. All right. Bye for now.